Don, what I'd like to ask you is, why title the book Rebooting Business?
Rebooting Business in the World. Because business in the world needs rebooting. The analogy is imperfect, actually, to be honest. Because a reboot is sort of like a fresh start. But we need more than a fresh start. I think we're at a turning point in history where many of the institutions that have served us well for decades or centuries are stalled, they're frozen. Because industrial society and its institutions were based on a set of implicit principles that are sort of antithetical to the principles of Wiccanomics, collaboration, openness, sharing intellectual property, interdependence, and integrity. Companies, for example, would externalize their costs onto society. If we reduce carbon emissions by 80% in the year 2050, not by 6%, by 80%, it'll take 1,000 years for the planet to cool down. And in the meantime, some bad things are going to happen. Like, you know, scientists estimate 1.5 billion people may lose half of their water supply in the next decade. So, I mean, our cities are now around the world. Many of them are in danger of collapse. We have a whole set of institutions that are now inappropriate, our models of democracy. You know, young people care a lot about the world. Youth volunteering is up all around the world, but voting among young people is down. I'm not suggesting, and we're not suggesting, we get rid of representative democracy. And sometimes you can't always get a majority to support a party. But I am suggesting that the you vote, I rule model is inadequate. It's the best model that 17th century technology can provide. But we can now move to a new model of the body politic, whereby rather than just having representative democracy based on a weak public mandate and inert citizenry, we can move towards a new model based on active deliberation and a culture of public engagement. This is a very exciting time, but it's also a time of great danger, because if we don't do this, there's a danger that democracy will become irrelevant and the governments will become irrelevant.
Mm. You talk about how macroeconomics will support a bottom-up regulatory framework. Mm-hmm. I mean, the idea of people can organize themselves and look out observe and regulate what big businesses are doing.
Absolutely, and it's a chapter that we call the citizen regulator. Yes. And it's a pretty interesting idea. It's not to say that we should get rid of government regulation, but increasingly people at their fingertips have access to information. They have the most powerful tool ever is for finding out what's going on, informing others, and even organizing collective responses. So institutions are becoming naked, and sunlight is a great disinfectant. In the past, there was this expression that you do well by doing good. And I don't think it was true. I think lots of companies did well by being really bad, by being monopolies or having terrible labor practices or externalizing their costs onto society, putting all their money into marketing rather than innovation. But increasingly, I think it's true that if you're not a company with values and integrity as part of your DNA, it will be difficult for you to build trust. And trust is the sine qua non of this new network world. Now, are we at the point where, for example, consumers will say, you know, I'm not buying an iPod or an iPad because they're made by Foxconn, which is this company whose plants in Shenzhen have been described as minimum security prisons, and where they have to put nets outside the windows for the people to jump out the windows to kill themselves. They've had a rash of suicides. Mm-hmm. But when does that tipping point occur?
Well, it happened with Nike.
It did. And the Gap had the same problem. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Nike got really buff, really fast. Nike is absolutely a leader in terms of these kinds of issues around the world now. It's not just about being a good company, although they're trying to do that. These are good, smart, competitive decisions, new ways of developing intellectual property for the digital age.
There was an interesting section where you talked about the similarities between the computer and the building blocks of life.
Well, it's sort of, we speculate about this age of networked intelligence. Like, what does it mean to connect human brains together with these giant pipes based of glass and air where bits are flying around at the speed of light? Mm-hmm. And could we move to some kind of new level of not just sharing information and knowledge, but perhaps to create some kind of collective intelligence or even consciousness? A great example there is called the murmuration of what happens in the moors of England. Auchmore, for example, outside Oxford, where starlings are flying around in a 20-mile radius during the day, and at night they come together and they create this extraordinary phenomenon of nature called a murmuration. And it's named after the murmuring of the wings of the birds. But you have thousands and thousands of birds that will swirl up like a tornado and crash down like a wave and then create an arrow that chases off a hawk. And then it will become a wispy mist and then thrust off into a big black cloud and so on. Birds are not intelligent because birds don't have intelligence, but they function on the basis of their own primitive understanding of their own location. But there's a real communication that happens. And the interests of the individual birds are also the interest of the collective. And they behave according to these principles that we describe in Wiccanomics, in macroeconomics. And it made us speculate, could we create some kind of collective intelligence with human beings? Because people are intelligent. Could we create a consciousness that might lead to learning organizations or to solving some of the big problems in society? I mean, what's happening around climate change? There's sort of a global consciousness being created on this topic that involves tens of millions of people who are acting now on the web to do something. And they're not just talking about it. They're architects retrofitting old buildings, and they're school kids changing the carbon emissions in their school districts and so on. So it's a time of great opportunity, I think.
Well, one of the things that interested me again was the idea of the open platform. You were talking about a car and how a car could have an open platform. How far away is that?
Well, it's happening. I don't know about cars. In a sense, it's happening with cars in that people now use iPhones as navigational devices and other technologies in cars, and those are open platforms upon which people are building location-based services and geospatiality applications. So the auto industry is not doing it, which is so typical that leaders of the old find great difficulty embracing the new. But this is happening throughout the economy and society. Obama's got a big thing about creating open platforms, whereby the old model of government was, I'm a government agency, you're a taxpayer, I take money from you, I hire these people, they're within my boundaries, they create services, we deliver these services back to you, we hope you enjoy our services. And the new, that will continue, of course, but the new model adds to that. No, we're actually a platform. And we've got this technology, and we've got all this data that we collect from everything from radon gas to bicycle accidents and to crime statistics and so on. And what we're going to do is just make this data available, and we're going to let society self-organize to use this data.
So this data will be publicly available?
Yeah,
public
information. It is, and it's becoming that. So. I was sitting with the CEO of Melbourne a couple of months ago in Australia, and we were talking about this, and I said to her, let's take something really simple like bicycle accidents. You have data about bicycle accidents? She said, sure. I said, just release it. Within 24 hours, someone will do a Google map of Melbourne, but it will show the dangerous places to go on a bicycle where people get killed. You'll be saving lives in a week. And it will cost you nothing to do that. So this is the notion of government as a platform. The British Columbia government in Canada just held a challenge where it released all kinds of data about the environment and carbon and challenged companies to build apps that would use this data. I was just there, and it was extraordinary. This one I saw from your iPhone, you can track carbon emissions real time in your company. So you turn off the lights on the floor of a building, it changes the carbon footprint of your company right there.
How do they do that?
Real time. Well, somehow they've got
access to the energy data.
Yeah. It's a whole bunch of data about energy and the environment and so on.
The government in the UK is thinking about it. Well, they are publishing some data.
Yeah.
I'm not sure it goes as far as some of the examples.
Well, Tim Berners-Lee is a good Brit, and he's been championing this idea, just release raw data, and he's absolutely right. Mm. So, and, you know, Prime Minister Cameron wants to have better, cheaper government. Well, this is one way of getting there. And it's not just about laying off civil service employees, it's about creating a platform upon which there's a new division of labor in society to create public value. Mm. This is not about outsourcing. There's nothing in the first place. There was no map of bicycle accidents, you know, prior to, you know, the government of Melbourne deciding to do this.
And there are business opportunities.
Oh, they're endless. A third of all of Amazon's revenue comes from its open platform.
By releasing the data into the public domain, the government can effectively boost the economy, create new business opportunities.
Sure. Solve social problems. Neighborhood Knowledge Los Angeles. This is a case we did a decade ago. It's now extended out across California. But the government releases data that might indicate a community is in trouble. Petty crime statistics, school dropouts, deadbeat dads, housing code violations. Then, again, new division of labor. So, get civil society organizations working with private companies, they create a map of LA. When the community starts to be in duress, the map changes color. And then individual citizens, civil society organizations can intervene, find out what's going on. Maybe it's a bunch of landlords are getting together and colluding and doing some bad stuff. And you fix the problem before it becomes a blow-up.
These are examples of how people can collaborate and governments and businesses can collaborate. Just to sum it up, how do you see those sorts of things relating to the subject of this book, Macroeconomics? Yeah.
All of these institutions need to be rebuilt around the internet and around a new set of principles. You know, collaboration, openness, sharing, interdependence, and integrity. So macroeconomics, I mean, the Huffington Post described it as nothing less than a game plan to rebuild a broken world. That's what we intended to do. Regardless of what industry you're in, tinkering is not going to work anymore. We need to reinvent these institutions around a whole new open network model. And the stakes are very high in doing that. After the financial crash in Japan, it's been 18 years, and we're still not out of it. Our view, Anthony and I, think that the future is not something just to be predicted, though. It's something to be achieved. And that we can achieve a different future if we want it. But it's going to require us to take action and to reboot and to rebuild all of these institutions around a new model.